Hi, folks. The last question that was asked was a great setup, really, for this final thing that we'd like to share with you. And as a way of just introducing some of the concepts, I just want to, I made some notes of some of the comments that some of the other facilitators have mentioned, and I'm going to link back to some things that Sheila said. And she said that farmers are doing what they're doing because they believe it's the best thing to do. And I think that's a really accurate assessment. You can assume that if people are frustrated, often they just get in habits and keep repeating the same behaviors, and that's where your role comes in to help them figure out how to change those behaviors. They may not think it's the best thing to do, but they may not know what alternatives are available. That growers don't believe just everything they're told, and we'll take a look at why not only just growers don't believe everything they're told, but all of us don't believe everything we're told. And again, what you can do about that, that's just human nature. And that information needs to be compelling in order to make a change. Farmers aren't going to just make a change at the rather casual recommendation. There needs to be evidence and there needs to be benefit that they see it. Tom talked about there's lots of science that does not get adapted. And what can we do about that? And I think that some of the skills that we try to demonstrate today will enable you to actually promote changes in farmer behavior. Tracy and Bianca both really emphasized the multiple variables involved in decision-making with regards to nutrient management and adaptive management approach to nutrient management. And I'd like to just highlight that in the overview, we're going to actually look at why interactive formats enable farmer input. They not only enable input, they enable change in behaviors. And we'll look at how learning and knowledge and behavioral change are based in experience, not information. A lot of you may consider yourself experts or are experts. You're the source of information for farmers and producers. And you may consider your role to provide information. Unfortunately, that information is not the same as changing in behavior. And I'll try to link those together, the links between learning and knowledge and behavioral change. And lastly, I'll leave with some really concrete things that I recommend you do that we've tried to demonstrate here today. Before we get started, I'd like you to ask to just write down a phrase or two about a memory that stands out for you. This literally will probably take about 10 seconds. And we'll get back to this in just a few minutes. So just write, and I didn't know this was a poem, but it is. Please write down a phrase or two about a memory that stands out for you. All set? Okay, we'll get back to that in just a few minutes. So one of the things I want to highlight is that word adaptive and adaptive management and some of the themes that I just tried to pull from some of the other facilitators is that adaptive has to do with being responsive, being able to consider multiple factors, and not only just consider them, but actually use them in the decision-making process, that it infers changeability and flexibility. Flexible has been a word that's been used a couple of times already this morning. And the trouble is that lecture formats are really limited with regards to enabling these types of things, the types of things related to adaptation. Yet interactive formats, as I'll show you in a minute, are much more effective at affecting these types of behaviors and attitudes related to adaption or being adaptive. Just the information flow, this is just a diagram of the way that information flows in a traditional lecture format. It's just linear, and it's usually from the speaker to receivers. And I just want, this type of diagram is the, represents the information flow in a more interactive format. And if it looks busy or complicated, that's good. That's the way it should look. Because that busyness in this diagram represents actually the sharing of the type of knowledge that people have that enable them to change their behaviors. And I'll describe that knowledge in just a minute. So actually, when you're working with farmers, when the question that came up, how do I, you know, when there's no questions at the end, what does that mean? If this type of dynamic happens while you're working with individuals, the questions arise and are addressed throughout the whole interactive process, not just something that happens at the end. Just to reiterate that information in itself is not knowledge, and that knowledge is not learning, and that learning is not behavioral change. And I think sometimes if we consider ourselves the experts of information, we're going to assume that people will change their behavior as soon as we share that information. That's not how human beings work, as you know. So a couple of just key things to keep in mind is that it's not information, but experience is the basis of learning new knowledge and behavioral change. And information is only one component of experience. And this is some food for thought that I challenge you in, is not to provide information. Rather, challenge yourself to think of ways to provide opportunities for learners to experience the information. And the activity where I asked you to write down a memory is a really simple little example of how I'm trying to illustrate a concept about memory and knowledge. And by not really talking to you about it, but asking you to do a short experience. So this role, this important role of experience rather than information, all happens at a neurological level, really at a brain level. And again, it's something that we all share. We're no different than farmers or producers or growers that we work with. We all have this type of wiring, and unfortunately, humans are pretty hardwired. We can change, thank goodness, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So I'd like to get into a little bit sort of like Brain 101 in about 5 minutes that I'll take to share that. And before that, I'd like you at your tables to just compare the memories that you wrote down with others at the table. And overall, do the memories have anything in common? And if they do, what is it? So just take a minute or two to do that. Make sure you focus your conversation now on what these memories might have in common. Do you see anything in common across your memories? Yes. unexpected. Are other groups ready? Okay. So one comment about the similarities in the memories is that they were unexpected. I'm so glad you said that. Remind me to pay you afterwards. anybody else? What was in common, either some or most of the memories? Yes. Tied to emotion. And were there any types of emotions in particular?
Negative.
Okay, well, we have some happy or positive emotions here, too. Any other commonalities? We have unexpectedness. We have the nature of it, whether it's really positive or negative. Yes. An aha element to it. The reason those things are memories is because you experienced them in ways that created ahas or that were unexpected. The brain is really tuned in to unexpected things. We tend to remember things that are surprises or unanticipated. We get an extra little burst of a particular chemical that really lays down that particular memory. We also have what's called a negativity bias. Our brain tends to remember things that are negative much more than things that are positive. And the reason is really for survival. As an organism, we really want to avoid negative experiences that we consider threatening, whereas positive or pleasant experiences aren't considered threatening, and we don't necessarily want to avoid them. On the other hand, positive experiences create opportunities for a set of memories related to that positive experience to be remembered quite well. Negative experiences, on the other hand, are usually about one particular negative set of circumstances, where pleasant memories tend to be more inclusive of a variety of experiences related to that. So a couple of things to keep in mind when you're trying to facilitate learning with folks that you work with is that the human brain puts an emotional tag on experience. And again, remember, try to avoid negative experiences when you're facilitating, because those will be remembered. People tend to avoid and making decisions or behaviors in negative circumstances. We tend to freeze, where in positive circumstances or memories tend to propel us into action. So again, the more that you can create positive learning experiences, the better. We store and retrieve memories based on experiences, not information. That's why it's so important for you to try to create opportunities for individuals to experience the information that you want to share, because that's how they remember it. For instance, I could have given you a little memory or a mini lecture on memory, but I didn't. I asked you to do a real brief activity where you wrote down a memory and you talked about it with others at your table and you tried to think about it in more analytical terms. Again, you did the work, you had the experience, I did not have to lecture about it. You are going to remember about memories when you leave here much more than if I had just talked about it for 2 minutes. Your brain's wired to compare new experiences with prior experience. This is super important because whatever situation you go into or you bring producers into, they're going to bring their past with them and their present, and they're going to sit at the here and now with you representing all their prior experiences. If you don't acknowledge that and tap into it, then you will not, they won't be ready to learn any new information or to participate in any new experiences that you have to share with them. The key is we don't build new knowledge through information. We build it through applying information, through trial and error, and deliberate practice. And all of those things, those terms here, application, trial and error, and deliberate practice, those are the ways that farmers in particular, given the nature of their occupation, they tend to learn in these modes much more commonly than other people in academic modes or modes where they're not in an unpredictable environment as often. So these types, you should be really familiar. Actually, we all tend to learn this way, but in my work with farmers, it's been fascinating for me to appreciate that these modes of learning and creating knowledge are really particular for farmers. Let's back up a sec. I've been kind of leading up to knowledge, and I want to help you appreciate two different types of knowledge in particular, because one type of knowledge called explicit knowledge is the type of knowledge that we tend to share in terms of information. And an example is a tomato is a fruit. Well, that's a fact. That's explicit. Tacit knowledge is the type of knowledge that actually directs our behaviors. We don't act on the fact that a tomato is a fruit, but we do act when we're making a fruit salad that we don't put tomatoes in a fruit salad. Do you appreciate the difference? It's the tacit knowledge that's the driver for behavior. And I'm going to give you some examples. Some of the things that we've done here today have been trying to get at your tacit knowledge to prime you to make some changes, perhaps in the way that you facilitate your work with producers or growers. Here's another example closer to home. Corn grows best with nitrogen. That's explicit content, knowledge, information. Tacitly, though, you might be working with growers where they believe their knowledge is more nitrogen ensures my investment. That is the knowledge that's going to drive them to lay out more nitrogen in any given season, not the fact that they know corn grows best with nitrogen. It's more about their knowledge about the investment. The trouble is, though, that, not a trouble, is that this tacit knowledge is knowledge that is that we don't talk about, that we just act on, and it's about, there's been a lot of research to indicate that most of our knowledge, up to even more, 70%, is this tacit sort of non-conscious knowledge. It's the intuitions that we have, where only 30% of the knowledge that we have is actually explicit. It's the knowledge we can talk about and share. So when you talk about being an expert and sharing information or disseminating new information about the new code, most of us tend to think about, okay, what's the information that I need to share? And we really put our efforts into focusing on how we can share that information. What you're doing is you're working on your role in your 30% explicit knowledge, and I'm going to encourage you to think about that other 70%, not only your tacit knowledge, which you bring to the situation that's going to influence the way that you share your knowledge, but also to tap into the tacit knowledge of the people that you're sharing that information with, because that's the thing that's going to change their behavior. So let's look a little bit more about how you might do that. As a way to set that stage, I just want to share with you some outcomes of some research that I did in a USDA grant back in the Northeast. It was some of you might be familiar with a Growing New Farmers grant in the Northeast. And we were asked to identify the effectiveness of 6 different new learning farmer systems that included apprenticeship programs or bachelor's degree programs, mentorship programs, immigrant education programs. And what we found is that among farmers that they had 4 different types of knowledge and skills, which, by the way, these are common to all of us, some of the ways that farmers went about learning and developing this knowledge was pretty unique to them. But in general, as humans, we tend to have these 4 types of knowledge. And I just want to point out particularly this strategic and the personal knowledge. It's that strategic knowledge where you'll see tacit knowledge is underlined there. Those are the knowledge that we have to tell us when and when not to do things. That's the real, the mentors, the folks with lots of experience that you're like, you better hold off. Don't be putting down your manure today. You know, that kind of real tacit knowledge, that's the example of strategic knowledge. There's another type of knowledge that we all have, and this one is a particularly tacit. It's the knowledge that we have about ourselves as learners, how we actually go about planning our learning and assessing it or modifying how we go about learning. And if you think for a minute, I wouldn't be surprised if you said to yourself, you know, I actually don't think I have personal knowledge. You do. It's just that it's so tacit and so ingrained in you that it's not something that you very often we tend to go back to. The thing is that these types of knowledges are developed in different ways. And this tacit knowledge, as I mentioned, is developed through things like problem solving and discovery learning, reflection, questioning your assumptions, trial and error. And as I said, in my work with farmers, I found that trial and error, and also learning through others, particular mentors, or in small group situations, was ways that farmers developed their tacit knowledge. In this slide, I just want to show that when you think about presenting information or content knowledge, it's called, that's primarily explicit. That's the type of information that you can read or get off the internet, talk about in a lecture. And this procedural knowledge about how to fix a tractor when it's broken, that type of knowledge usually starts out explicit. You learn or you watch or you read, and then with practice it becomes second nature. That's sort of a riding bike analogy where when as a kid, it's really hard to first learn how to ride a bike. It's very explicit. You might memorize everything. But then after a while, it just becomes second nature, and that's procedural knowledge. Strategic knowledge, I just described, is primarily tacit. But with encouragement and situations for people to experience different types of situations, that strategic knowledge can become explicit and shared with others so that others can benefit from, for instance, the example of folks that are experts in their field. And then there's this personal knowledge that also is primarily tacit, yet it can be made explicit. And when people start to think about the way that they learn and make decisions, or that they actually don't plan their learning very effectively and think about how to be more effective in planning their learning, or knowing when they need to go get resources, when they can't do it on their own, that's the type of information. My key point is that all four types of knowledge contribute to expertise, decision-making, and behavioral change. And that we tend to focus, for instance, in lecture formats, we just focus on content or information. And interactive formats, though, enable the development of all these four types of knowledge. For example, Tracy and Chris asked you folks to talk among yourselves and to address specific questions. The questions were actually designed to be somewhat developmental. Tracy's questions were more general, the overall setting the stage with regards to the need for adaptive management, whereas Chris's questions were more specific for your own particular context or state circumstances. And the action where folks were asked to talk with each other, we didn't ask you to make consensus, which was an important part because we want to keep things positive. But that process of sharing your knowledge, talking with each other, was our attempt to try to get you to share your strategic and personal knowledge with each other more than just listen to the content that we had to share. And so when you create learning environments that look like this, this is a good thing because that tacit knowledge that we all have is surfacing and is being shared. So when you create a learning environment, it should look something like this. It should actually look chaotic. The more chaotic, the better. And I just want to close for the last 3 or 4 minutes with some overall guidelines and then a couple of specific interactive formats that you could try. These guidelines actually serve as a summary of key points. Use classroom and workshop settings to develop learners' strategic and personal knowledge. We don't do that. We don't use these settings where everybody is in the same room at the same place to actually share the important stuff. We use it as a place to share information in perhaps a lecture format where, that they could have gotten online or in text or in some other means that's much more amiable to just sharing information. When you've got folks together, real live human beings in the same room at the same place, that's the time for them to share their expertise, their intuitions, their expert knowledge. Provide experiences that help learners make their tacit knowledge explicit. That's when you ask individuals to talk with each other or to ask questions or to write things down and share what they write. Sheila made a comment that we had forced you to participate in the activities. Well, as you know, we didn't really force you because we can't force you to do anything. But the point I want to make is that we tried to create circumstances by which you were comfortable enough to talk with each other and to share your ideas with each other. And that's what your job is really the best you can do is to create the environment and then keep your fingers crossed a little bit. This idea I mentioned, this sort of negativity bias that the brain has, it's actually really important to try to avoid kicking in that negativity bias and try to use supportive social interactions to add a positive emotional component to learning. That's actually really important. A comment I think Chris asked about food. Food is actually really positively linked to positive emotional learning experience. As humans, we're really tuned into food. So it's not a bad idea. Encourage learners to relate their prior experiences to current information and experiences. I mentioned that not only farmers, producers, but all of us, we come to any given learning situation or any given experience with all our prior experiences with us. If you don't tap into those, you don't recognize and really honor and respect what each person brings to the table, then that's not going to create an environment for them to share their tacit knowledge and to learn from each other. A few interactive formats, and this is as a way to just summarize or maybe put some terms on some of the activities that we did here today with you, is instead of just presenting information as just the facts, for instance, try to create a case study or a scenario or a problem analysis. Set the problem up, and Tracy did this when he actually sort of set the background with regards to adaptive management and how current practices are deficient, and then set the problem up and asked you to address it. The key when you do that is not to ask folks to solve the problem or to solve the scenario, but actually address the situation, assess the circumstances of the situation. That should be what the efforts in a group, not to actually solve the case. I think sometimes people don't go about the case or the problem analysis formats very well when they actually focus on people coming out with the right answer, because in many cases, real problems don't have only one answer. There is no sense in trying to solve the problem, but trying to frame the problem and figure out what resources you need to address it, that's really where the learning and the sharing goes on. And another really good strategy, if you set up like a case or a scenario, is to ask folks to prioritize. That's another good way of bringing out their tacit knowledge. Chris tried to ask you to do more practical implementation, and for instance, he specifically asked you to identify resources that were needed, stakeholder perspectives, potential barriers. Those are all really concrete things that you can do to ask people, again, instead of lecturing, set up the situation. I'm not an agronomist, but I felt like I learned a lot when the folks from the groups took the microphone and went up and talked about what they had come up with on their sheets. There was a lot of quote, technical type of information that was shared there, but it was shared in a way that represented knowledge for everybody to gain. It wasn't just dry information. Another strategy, and Sheila exemplified this, was to try to ask people to think about their best experiences or their worst experiences and the lessons that they've learned from their experiences. And Sheila did this, put up the best experience. Ask folks to say, why was it the best or why was it worst? Identify common themes across best and worst experiences. I just gave you a quick example of asking people to identify themes across memories at a table. It literally took 2 minutes. It doesn't take a lot of your time, but it is a place where folks can share their tacit knowledge. Make a list of lessons learned from all experiences. So you end up with this composite list of lessons learned that represents the knowledge, that tacit knowledge, from everybody in the room. Again, a standard lecture format is not going to end up with this type of output. This is much more meaningful. And then what's really important is to actually provide some follow-up.